Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Years ago, New Hampshire's community colleges largely provided vocational education and technical training. Today, their role is much broader, but community college does still offer many students a fast, focused, affordable pathway to employment. But how fast is too fast? How focused is too focused? Beyond workforce training, what should community colleges do to prepare graduates to be both employees and citizens? That's a conversation going on right now on New Hampshire's seven campuses, and it's a conversation we're tapping into today on The Exchange. So let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter, it's NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have four guests. Ross Cattell is here, Chancellor of the Community College System. He's also Vice President and Forecast Manager for the New England Economic Partnership. He was appointed Chancellor in 2012. Before that, he was a longtime professor at UNH's Whittemore School of Business and Economics. Chancellor Cattell, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good to be with you, Laura.
Also with us, Stu Wallace, History Professor at NHTI, Concord's Community College. He teaches many courses but specializes in New Hampshire history. He's also the former director of New Hampshire's Historical Society and former director of the New Hampshire Division of Historical Resources. And Stu Wallace, a big welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
Also with us, Savannah Brunel. She's president of the Student Senate at Lakes Region Community College, where she studies liberal arts. Savannah is transferring to Plymouth State University in the fall to major in communications. And Savannah, thank you very much for taking time out. I know you're very busy. Thanks.
Thank you.
And also with us, Brian Bicknell. He's vice president of academic affairs for Manchester Community College. And Brian, thank you very much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I want to ask this one question to everybody, but Chancellor Cattell, I'll start with you. How do you think most people in New Hampshire see the role of community college today?
Right. Laura, you mentioned that our community college is about 50 years old, and a lot of people think about it in the historical context. New Hampshire's community colleges were founded to meet the needs for a higher educated, a higher skilled population coming out of World War II and the growth of industrialization and advanced and manufacturing in the state of New Hampshire, and the need to enhance the skill levels of the population to drive the economy and to drive people's economic opportunity, that with getting advanced skills and being able to place into growing jobs and jobs opportunity across the state, that that would give them the opportunity to have a good life.
So what's in a name, Ross, between technical college, junior college? Yeah. That's what we used to call community colleges. Now we call them community colleges. Why does that matter?
Well, it matters because we're comprehensive community colleges now. And that means that we provide not only the technical and the vocational education to prepare somebody for a job, a particular job like a nurse or an advanced manufacturer, we also provide access to comprehensive higher education, including strong education in the humanities and the liberal arts. So students in any community virtually across the state of New Hampshire could get access to quality higher education, and they might end up with a terminal degree, the associate's degree, which is the two-year degree, or transfer, as Savannah is planning to do, to Plymouth State University and get that bachelor's degree, but have those credits transfer over.
Give us a rough breakdown, Chancellor Cattell, of the student body. How many are pursuing degrees more like automotive repair, nursing, and how many are picking that more general liberal arts
part
path?
Of why it's difficult for people to, you know, put an easy category or a simple category on community colleges is because about 20% of our students are in the humanities or the arts.
20%?
Yeah, about 20% are in STEM. About 20% are in the social or behavioral sciences. And then you have, the strong areas in healthcare, which is, another large strong area. And so that's a broad base. So, and it's a diverse, broad, and it's aligned with student interest. And it's aligned with the interest in the broader economy. So when people say, well, community colleges do technical and vocational, yes, that's about, a fifth of what we do. Community colleges do humanities. Well, yes, that's about a fifth of what we do when students do the social sciences. So that's why it's hard to put community colleges in a narrow category. But some people, because of the history, think of the community colleges as the voc or the tech college because of our founding, which was to provide that very strong linkage between the economy and education. And we still do that, but we also include with that broad access to quality higher education in communities all across the state.
Brian, why do you think that image persists? Chancellor Gattell just gave us a picture of how broad the offerings are at community college today. But he said that image of the tech, so to speak, still persists.
Yeah, it's fascinating. When I'm in the community and talking to people, there's all these multiple perspectives on the mission of the community college and across the state. And so when I talk to K-12 folks, the thing that they talk about are mayors or representatives. The big thing they reference is the access mission, and it provides access and opportunity. And I think the historical perspective is, they were called technical colleges. So there's that kind of historical point of view on it. When I talk to students, I was talked to about, I would say, 50 students in a couple different focus groups yesterday. And Savannah can talk about this, and she's a great example of it. They're talking about upward mobility. So it's not just access, but it's upward mobility. So they're looking at it from their perspective. What can I do to grow and develop and improve the quality of my life and the quality of my community? And then when we talk, we have advisory boards. Most programs have advisory boards from people that are in the community. And when they come in, they're talking about educated workforce. And so they're looking at it from like a macroeconomic perspective. And so you have, I think the viewpoint depends on where you sit and what you're going for. So, at Manchester Community College, if you look at us, 30% of our students are in the liberal arts, 20% are in business. So you have, there's half the college right there in those two areas. And then we have nurses and medical assistants and HVAC and e-tech, electrical technology, welding. So it's truly, as Chancellor Gattell said, it's comprehensive. But I think people may have, this kind of bit of an old school perspective because they're going back in time, and so that's just what they're used to.
It's interesting you said that your advisory boards come in and say they want an educated workforce, but what does that mean? Because it seems like employers are constantly shifting by what they mean for an educated workforce, and every job is so different.
Yeah, it's a great question. So, we have one in automotive, an advisory board for automotive. We actually have multiple advisory boards because we have different, we work on Fords and different kind of cars. We have all these different advisory boards. And what they help us do is they'll come in and they'll explain, this is where we're going in this area. And there's new things that are always being integrated. So we're always adjusting, amending our curriculum to be in alignment with what's going to be needed out there. And so that's a critical component. So there's the technical component for that specific example. But then what we're also hearing is, to this larger humanities discussion, is that we need people that can think creatively, critically, and engage in problem solving and can have emotional intelligence and can relate to customers. We have different programs where nurses, you're dealing with people every day in very serious situations. So a technical understanding of what needs to be done isn't enough.
A course in psychology sounds like it would be
right. Helpful.
It's huge.
And cultural competence is huge. And so we have people from different backgrounds. They have different life experiences. And how do you relate to these different people in a way that you make meaningful connections? And if you're in the for-profit sector, that's if you can connect with more people, that means you can make more money. If you're in the service industry in the nonprofit, that's what your mission-centric is, be able to relate to people. So whatever side you're on, profit or nonprofit, those relational talents are critical.
Well, it's really interesting. And Stu Wallace, you've been making the argument that, quote, meeting the immediate needs of the job market is not synonymous with meeting the needs of society. So what are you trying to say there, Stu?
Well, first of all, the immediate needs of the job market can change over time. It's certainly changed over time since I've been around. But I think more to the point, and I tend to come at it from the perspective of students. I spend about 900 hours a year in the same room with students, either teaching them or sitting in the office with them or going to doing things with them. And I think that one of the things we say at NHTI is true. We said, start here, go anywhere. Most of these students coming in are, in the words of one psychologist, emerging adults. They're going from a home environment and a public school environment to an environment where they're breaking away from the home and they're going into a school environment where they have to make their own decisions. And that's the tough part. Do they know what really is ahead? Do they know what kinds of opportunities and possibilities are there? The thing that I think the community college system has done is it has broadened the possibilities. It has made it possible for students to see that the whole playing field, if you will. And what we need to continue to do, whether we're talking about the workforce or the opportunities for employment or whatever, is continue to say to the student, you know, what's your passion? What are what are you good at? What do you want to spend the rest of your life doing? That's a tough one for people 18 to 23, 24 years of age, and they don't always have the answers.
And Savannah's nodding, and I'm going to go to you in a second, Savannah,
you
for
have
sure.
All the answers, right?
Right, at the tender age of 20. But, Stu, what does an educated workforce mean today? I thought it was really interesting what Brian said, that even for people in very technical fields, you need to have a wider array of understandings.
Well, questions have often been asked of business, what do you want? And sure, there are certain technical things they want. But in the end, they often say, we want people who can think, make good decisions, who can work in a collaborative atmosphere, who can also be creative. We want people who have a number of skills that may not appear in a resume, but they're the kinds of skills that you look for when you interview somebody for a job. You're going to say, wait a minute, this guy's got all the right academic qualifications, but is this the person who's going to be able to make a good decision, a wise decision? I always say to my students, I said, look, you can forget half of the history I teach you, but I'd like you to come out of here with a greater ability to make good, ethical, wise decisions. And that's something you're going to look for no matter what the field, no matter what the discipline.
Okay, so Savannah, your turn. What are you hoping to get out of your 2 years at Lakes Region Community College?
So I feel like I feel pretty good about what I've gotten out of it so far. I feel like prior to high school, they had this big idea that you're supposed to go to university and get really involved, and it's supposed to be this grand old time. But if I wouldn't have started at LRCC, I don't think I would be going to a university and being as involved as I am. I had a lot of great opportunities open up to me. So to just have like the very personal head with like my faculty and staff, it really helped with that.
Because it's small, community college.
Right, yeah.
You're not in some giant university campus with 30,000 other people.
Right. We don't have any lecture halls. My biggest class probably has like 15 people in it. And that's shooting like far for it. And my smallest class has 5. And so you get a lot of one-on-one, and it's really helpful to have that experience with another person because you're not going and sitting there and thinking, okay, how am I going to do this? I don't have anybody to fall back with. They all help you when you need it. And like Sue said, the making ethical and wise decisions, my teachers are all like that too. They're like, we're teaching you things, but there's an end goal out of it to think, sure, you can sit here and retain all this information about history, whatever you're trying to learn. But the big thing is to experience life experiences from it.
And I want to just ask a little bit about your own life story, Savannah. From what I understand, you're living at home to save money, which a lot of students do, right? So you live at home. You don't have to spend money living on campus. You are a full-time student?
Yes.
And you have 2.5, 3 jobs. So just tell us how you manage all that, because I think that's pretty typical of community college students. A lot of them are working and maintaining pretty hefty course loads.
So running start in high school actually helped me with that because I didn't have to take as many classes going into it. And that was really helpful that they encouraged us to do that while we were still in high school. So right now I'm taking 4 classes. One of them's a lab though, which means it meets two times a week. And then I do have 3 jobs. I work at the school, as a work study. But my advisor who I work under, he's really helpful with that because if it's interfering with not getting my homework done, he'd rather me get my homework done than work on paperwork for Student Senate. But usually it's pretty manageable.
And you're going to Plymouth State University in the fall?
Yes.
Living
I'm
on campus,
excited.
Doing that full, as you said, a jolly old time.
I'm not sure if I'm going to stay on campus yet. If anything, I'd like to stay off campus in like a student apartment kind of thing.
But having that live away from home experience. I want to remind our listeners that you can join us. The number here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, we're looking at the role of community college for our students and for our workforce today. There's a conversation going on right now at community colleges about what courses students should take, the role of humanities in community college, and preparing students for both work and citizenship. We'd love your thoughts, questions, comments, personal experiences at 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Brian Bicknell, go ahead. You want to jump in?
Yeah. Student Savannah just pointed to something that's real critical. You were asking about perceptions of community colleges earlier and why people get these different perceptions. And because the cost of attendance for community colleges is lower than you're going to find anywhere else, I think that alone creates a certain perception, and maybe people think there's these huge lecture halls with this 500 students in a lecture hall and you don't get that individual attention. But you heard Savannah talk about, you know, her faculty, the small faculty student ratio, her relationship with her advisor. And the first thing Stu said was, you know, my priority is the students. And if you go to any classroom in any of the community college system, community colleges, you're going to see that. And if you talk about pedagogy, the science of teaching and learning, you can go and look in the classrooms, and even 5-10 seconds, you can see the engagement between the faculty and the student. And sometimes it's knee to knee. It's a faculty sitting right beside a student, knee to knee, looking at a paper and working through an essay. And that's a critical component of the whole access and upward mobility and workforce development that we talked about. And it happens every day.
I want to ask all of you about something that Stu Wallace said, helping students be well-educated, not just for the workforce, but for life. And Stu, give us a little bit more there. And then Chancellor Gattell, I'm going to ask you about a grant that you guys got a year or two ago that is aimed at that. But go ahead, Stu.
Well, we don't necessarily know where our students are going to go for a career, profession, whatever. They may not know. But we do know that they're probably going to be citizens of the United States. And we do know that they are going to have to make decisions, all kinds of decisions. And so we need to help them prepare for the making the right decision, the ethical decision, the wise decision. We also need to help them understand what it is to operate in a larger environment. I mean, they are going to be citizens. They are going to have to make decisions about who to vote for or a zoning ordinance or something along these lines. And we do want them to participate in a broader world. We often talk about civic engagement. They should participate in nonprofit work. They should participate in social welfare organizations or political organizations, because that's part of life in America.
So is that an argument, Stu, for, you know, civics 101 for everybody on campus, no matter what their degree? Or?
Well, it is actually, in a way, that I think citizens as students ought to get involved in something along the lines of American government. And 3 years ago, I wound up doing something, a civic engagement program that Ross put together on convincing students they should get involved through the New Hampshire primary. We want students to be involved in the larger world because then they see other options, other possibilities.
Well, after the break, we'll drill into what that means, what type of coursework actually creates or facilitates that type of good decision-making, as you said, Stu. I know everybody will have thoughts about that. And we'll start taking your calls and emails. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Thank you.
Recently on The Exchange, we explored a particularly New Hampshire institution.
A town minus its general store has a huge hole in it, and people know that. Even if you don't stop at the general store, you want there to be one, because you know that that's like having the lights on. It's the pilot light of your town, and if it's out, you feel like there's something wrong.
The Exchange is your place for New Hampshire conversations. Every weekday at 9 a.m., only on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, New Hampshire's community colleges. What's the broader value of that two-year degree, and how can it best prepare students for both work and citizenship in the wider society? Let's get your thoughts in on that question. 1-800-892-6477. What do we expect from our community colleges today? What should we expect? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. With me in studio, Brian Bicknell, Vice President of Academic Affairs at Manchester Community College. Savannah Brunel, she's a student and President of the Student Senate at Lakes Region Community College. Stu Wallace is here, History Professor at NHTI, Concord's Community College, along with Ross Gattell, Chancellor of New Hampshire's Community College System. And everyone but Chancellor Gattell, you next, please. Let's drill into what it means to take courses that help you make decisions. We all are nodding. We're all saying, yes, it's important that students learn how to take responsibility, make decisions, but how do you incorporate that into coursework?
Okay. Well, I'll give a specific example that Professor Wallace, Stu, was involved with. It was 4 years ago. And it was around New Hampshire's First in Nation primary. And Stu, I believe the course was kind of a history course on the New Hampshire primary and on civic engagement and democracy, with the meaning of democracy.
Right. That was the core, but then we brought in a whole bunch of people, including Laura, to participate.
Yeah, and part of that participation was having presidential candidates come and meet with the students and have the students ask questions. And what better way to hear about the importance and the power of civic engagement and the democratic process and actually experience it in New Hampshire and be informed, educated voters and put that in historical context of the New Hampshire primary and the importance of that.
So it's outside the classroom, not just in the classroom.
It's inside and outside the classroom, and it's integrating those. That's really the real core of the community college system, is integrating inside the classroom with outside in the community in the larger context, including the economic and employment context. Because we're not an ivory tower, we're community-based, and we also work with the high schools. So when Savannah talked about the Running Start courses, that's our dual enrollment, dual credit courses with the high schools, that those credits transfer to over 200 colleges across the country, which speaks to the high quality of our humanities programs and other programs. But back to the importance of the humanities, some students don't appreciate the humanities when it's just taught out of a textbook or a reading. When they actually work with a professor like Stu and see the relationship between what they read, what they talk about in class, and the real world, that's when many students really learn the material, is when they apply the material and see it makes a difference in their lives and the lives of others.
So that's when the lights start to go off. They learn about the French Revolution,
yes,
or whatever. And
some
they
people
say,
could, you know, I learn more on a theoretical level. Some students don't learn on a theoretical level. They learn more on an applied level. And we have some, like students like Savannah, she might learn more, might be more meaningful on an applied level. And that's really part of the core of what we do, what professors like Stu Wallace does.
So here's my big question for all of you, and I'd love your thoughts. Stu, I'll start with you, but I want to hear from everybody. Should a student who is doing culinary arts, nursing, HVAC, which I believe is,
yep,
sort of heating and cooling systems. Is that right?
Yeah. That's right.
Should that student, Stu, also have to take a history course with you? Is that just, should that be required for everybody?
No, I wouldn't be that specific in what they have to do. They do have to take some electives, and those electives can open doors they may never have dreamed of. I was an engineer as an undergraduate, and I was forced kicking and screaming one day to take, after 2 years, an English class, and I loved it, and that turned me around. I scrapped engineering and went into the humanities because that meant something to me.
Almost at the end of your college career,
it was the end,
right,
of my college career, yeah.
You switched majors.
Scramble credits to get out of there, but That made a huge difference to me, simply because it opened doors that I didn't imagine. And what you want in any course, I don't care whether it's natural sciences or humanities or whatever, is in the end you want to learn more about yourself and the world you live in. You want to have a better sense of your world and your place in that world. You can do that through a specific course or courses or curriculum. You can do that through mentoring relationships. One thing you get at a community college, Savannah mentioned smaller classes, but we also have, you sit down with professors who've been in the real world. Most of our professors are people who actually have had a variety of jobs outside. They've applied their discipline to real-world situations, and now they're coming back in there, and they're talking to students about what you can do with a history degree or expertise in HVAC or a nursing degree or whatever. They can talk to you about the things that are out there. You don't normally get that in a four-year college.
Because of that real-world experience that your professors
yeah, you don't
have.
Have
a lot of them have other
experience.
Jobs and
yeah.
so forth. Brian, I'd love your thoughts on this, too, and Savannah.
Yeah, so I have this idea. I'm going to collaborate with one of the faculty at UNH on a TED Talk, and the working title is "Why Electricians Need Shakespeare." Now you can take out Shakespeare.
That's
and put
my
something,
question.
Right,
that's what I'm wondering about.
And so it gives you a wider perspective of the world. And you know, one of the things that Stu teaches in his history class is, or what the students learn, is that many of the challenges that we face today are not new challenges. And so learning from the past can help us deal with the future. The other thing that the humanities teaches us is that all this thing that we call life, we look around, the structures, the systems, the environment, the rules, the policies, were created by people no smarter than us. And so what that means is we can change it. We can make it better. We can invent things. We can create things. We can problem solve in a different way. We can build on what's already there, or we can completely upend it. There's always a gap between where you are and where you want to be. And the humanities, more than any other area, does more to close that gap or show students that we can close that gap and start to engage in the creative process. Okay, what do we do? And what challenge do you want to take on? You know, there's plenty of challenges out there. That, you know, there's a lot of messed up things in this world. And so where's your passion points? What do you want to do? And then align your talents and your energies to close that gap and to make things better. And I think more than any other area, that's what the humanities teaches us.
Okay, well, that's a TED Talk that I would definitely tune into. But let me ask you, why electricians need Shakespeare? Do electricians at Manchester Community College, where you work, have to take Shakespeare or history or English?
They do.
They do.
Yeah, it's a requirement. And now, we don't prescribe Shakespeare, right? They can take Shakespeare, or they can read Emerson and Thoreau. And they have electives, they can take a certain level of history electives they can take, so they can choose the one that is the most interesting. In some cases, it's pragmatic what class is offered at a time that they can take it, along with balancing out their employment situation. But they do have to take at least a third of their classes are going to be in this area.
What do students say about this, Savannah? Do some of them say, look, I just want to get out of here. I need to work. A lot of students on community colleges have financial needs. They have families already, some of them. So what do they say about whether they need to take Shakespeare or not?
So our biggest program at LRCC is fire science. And speaking, not trying to speak on behalf of them, but to have them in some of my elective classes or classes that they are required to take, they would rather spend their whole day down learning about fires and fire alarms and stuff that they're...
They want to be firefighters.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what they really want to focus on. So when they have to take an English course, they sit there and dread it. whether it's good or not, I just feel like they want to learn more about what they want to do. So coming from me, who I'm a liberal arts, where I had no idea what I want to do, and I still don't really, having to take multiple courses, whether I want... like if they're related to me or not, is helpful. But for people who know what they want to do, I feel like it just causes extra stress almost because that's not necessarily what they want or what they'll need.
Well, sure. And if they really don't enjoy it and don't understand it and don't get it, they might flunk the class. And then that's kind of a waste of money and time.
Right.
Chancellor Cattell, you want to jump in on that?
Sure. You know, the reason why we have faculty like Stu, administrators like Brian, overseeing the curriculum is to look at the issues that you're talking about and make decisions about the relevance of different types of curriculum and different types of requirements. We don't have students come in and say they could take whatever they want and we'll give them a degree. No, it is the academic quality that's upheld by the faculty and the administrators in the academic area and then overseen by the accreditating body. And it's a thorough process because it looks at the issues about the long-term relevance of higher education. And it's not saying, yep, your student in fire science might not really appreciate the value of taking an English course. But as Brian said, it doesn't have to be Shakespeare. It doesn't have to be Thoreau. It could be something they could read Norman McLean about, young men in fire and read about firefighting, in Montana and the science.
Fahrenheit 451.
Right, right. So there are things that they could read. Professors at the community colleges, like Stu, understand the student body. You know, Stu is 900 hours a year with students. They know the student body, so they teach to that student body. Having taught at UNH for 20 years, the student body there is different. And it takes a very skilled professor, faculty member, to understand. You can have students in your class like Savannah, in English or history class, and you can have the fire science students, but you have to appreciate their perspective and teach in that context.
So make the case to a student in the electrician program or the fire science program, Ross, that they should stick with it, that they should take this course, even though they're not interested, even though they're in danger of flunking.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a real specific example. It's in our auto technology program, and students there, and auto technology is increasingly like computer science and programming.
Absolutely.
It's all, computerized. But auto technologists do very well when they graduate. It's a high-paying job. And they say, just give me the skills, the technical skills.
Just give me what I need
right.
So I can finish.
If you work for a franchise, let's say Brian mentioned Ford Motors, and the car is under warranty, and you're the technician, and a new customer comes in and says, I'm having this problem. The technician comes and says, yeah, you have that problem. I said, okay, what was the problem? It shouldn't have come out. It should have never been delivered with that specific problem. For the franchise owner, the Ford dealership in New Hampshire, to get reimbursed by Ford Motor Company for that work and not have to charge the client, the technician has to write up in a succinct fashion what was the problem, diagnose it, and make the justification that that problem should have been under warranty and covered by Ford Motors in Detroit. Otherwise, that franchise dealer is paying that bill. So if I'm a franchise dealer and I'm hiring an auto technologist, do I want them to be able to write a succinct summary of a problem-solving exercise and to make that case? Yes, I do want them to write. So that's a really – and if you think about in the fire sciences area, if you're subject to liability or, questions about how you treat it, how you address the fire, you're going to have to write up something. You're going to have to speak in front of somebody. You're going to have to make a case. You're going to have to understand the larger context. You're going to have to understand the legal system. You're going to have to understand more than just how to fight fires.
Couldn't those writing and speaking skills, though, Chancellor Cattell, be taught within those courses?
Sometimes they are. And that's why you have certificate programs which are not degrees, which don't have as many elective requirements, including the humanities. We have half our students are 25 and older. Some of these people come in, they want a six-week boot camp program to be a medical assistant, and they already have some college. They might have a bachelor's degree already. We don't have elective credits, but that's not an associate's degree or a transfer pathway to a bachelor's degree. So we do have those offerings. And then it gets back to the confusion about community college. Say, oh, you do six-week training programs. How could you do the humanities? Well, we're describing it because we do a lot of different things, and they serve the community.
Let's go to our listeners, all of you. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. All of you, lots of people want to jump into this conversation. So let's go to Casey in Canterbury first. Hi, Casey. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call. So I am a huge advocate of community college. I kind of fell into it on accident, and it wasn't as planned and smooth as it ended up turning out. I think the biggest benefit that I've received that I, like other students who might be thinking about going from high school directly into a university and going into the dorms is that, like Savannah had mentioned, she does have the capability of being in the workforce right now. And if you do have an idea of where you want to be, so personally, I got into healthcare. So I was able to work on an associate's degree while I worked in healthcare. And so by the time I finished my associate's degree, I had already been working in the field for a few years. And I've now and working on a bachelor's degree.
So, Casey, what's your broad sort of thought or comment that you'd like to share with our listener, our guests?
I think that you can benefit financially by going to a community college and being in the workforce by, one, saving money on smaller student loans, but also being more sellable, I guess, because you have experience, whereas somebody who goes away to, and has that jolly good time college experience
as Savannah said
do,
earlier.
So.
Casey, thank you so much for the call. And Brian, I wonder if you hear this from your students that, you know, frankly, this helps them not only save money, but also a lot of them are working like Savannah is. And so they can show that they have workforce skills as well.
Yeah, I mean, Casey brought up a really good point. So I appreciate that call. And you know, one of the things that we really obsess over, and Chancellor Gatella has really brought this to the community college system in New Hampshire, is what's called guided pathways. And so we want to provide pathways to students to reach their goal, whether it's to get an associate degree and get a job or go on to get a bachelor's degree. And so we offer classes at flexible times. You know, at Manchester, we have classes. We run them in the day. We run them at night. We run them online. We run them hybrid. So there's multiple delivery systems. And we meet students where they are. And we get students that come in, they have some college experience, some have no college experience, some are 25, some are 30, some are north of 50. And so they come to us and we meet them where they are. And we have, you know, what we call earn and learn model. So you can work and go to college at the same time. You know, in our business department, you can attend on Mondays and Wednesdays and get an associate degree in 16 months. And it means you're also attending classes in the summertime on Mondays and Wednesdays. But it means you have five other days to work and have family responsibilities. And that's part of the access mission of what we really obsess over is providing those opportunities. So we know there are a lot of people that need to, you know, have families and need to pay bills. They also want to increase their education so that they can have jobs that pay above minimum wage and have upward mobility beyond it. So that's part of everything that we're doing, and I think that's part of what Casey experienced.
Well, and that work, academic pressure, when you're trying to combine the two, that speaks to the larger question that we're looking at, Brian. Can you take time out for the Shakespeare course or the history course when you are under pressure to graduate, get that degree, and join that upward mobility that you talked about?
They can do it because it fits into the schedule. So we have a schedule that meets what their life needs are, and they can do it, and they benefit from it.
All right, Casey, good to hear from you. You can join us as well, 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back.
New Hampshire Supreme Court has said the state must provide an adequate education to every child. What exactly that means is up for debate.
You're confusing what the definition of an adequate education is and what school districts are actually spending for bells and whistles.
People are really at the end of a road here that I think needs a change.
I'm Sarah Gibson. Listen for Adequate, a new series about how the state decides the value of public education. Thursdays on Morning Edition, only on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Exchange listeners, you're invited to a special live evening broadcast of our show next week on Tuesday, April 30th. We'll be talking about public education funding live at 7 p.m. with an audience here in our Concord studios. So go to nhpr.org to register for your free tickets. Back to our conversation now about the value of a community college education. Let's get your comments and questions in. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call like Casey did, 1-800-892-6477. And Chancellor Gotell, before we get back to the phones, I did want to ask you about this idea that we've been hitting on, the role of the humanities, this broader education. Brian said he wants to do a TED Talk on why electricians need Shakespeare. You recently at the community college system in New Hampshire got a big grant from the Mellon Foundation to sort of enhance the humanities, and I wonder how that's rolling out.
Right. The Andrew Mellon Foundation, which is the largest national foundation funding higher education. It's usually to research one universities, high-level research universities, you know, like Yale, like University of New Hampshire. And the Andrew Mellon Foundation is committed to enhancing the humanities and excellence in the humanities. And they recognize that the only area within higher education where humanities enrollment was increasing was among community colleges.
Wow, that's really interesting.
And they had never, until about 4 years ago, they had never funded a community college.
Ever?
Ever. And we were part of a small cohort of community colleges from across the country that got funding. It was about a little over 2 years ago because they recognized our work, including the work that Professor Wallace had been doing around, civic engagement. And they wanted us to work with our flagship Research One University, the University of New Hampshire, and their College of Liberal Arts, to continue our work and to enhance those guided transfer pathways that Brian talked about in the humanities, and to have humanities-based events at our colleges to bring the humanities to communities across the state of New Hampshire. And we continue to be recognized for that work. Nationally, the chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities, the most prestigious and significant humanities organization within federal government, the chairman, John Parrish Petey, will be at our graduation at Manchester Community College, where Brian is, in recognition of the work. And it highlights the importance of the humanities at community colleges at a national level with the National Humanities Endowment for the Humanities, at a prestigious national foundation, Andrew Mellon, and it signifies the recognition that we're getting at our community colleges, NHTI, Lakes Region, and Manchester Community Colleges, and our other four community colleges for the work we're doing in the humanities. And it's terrific to have this show, because I think a lot of people in New Hampshire don't know that we do this work in the humanities while we're getting this recognition nationally.
What does that say to you, Chancellor Gotell, and maybe you too, Stu? What does that say that this big foundation, very prestigious, always investing in places like, you know, Yale and so forth, has decided to invest in humanities at the community college level, given what you said earlier, Chancellor Gotell, about, you know, a lot of people still think community college is where you should go and learn HVAC or nursing, and then you get out and you start working. So what does that say to you that they have made that investment? Do you want to jump in first, Stu?
Well, I think they finally realized there's an awfully large percentage of young people or returning people like veterans and others who go through the community college system. And you can't just ignore that large group of people. You've got to say, okay, there's humanities out there. One of the issues that we have with humanities is often students think of this as, well, that's one of those courses we're going to have to take and get through in a hurry, and there's no way to go with that. What the Mellon Foundation is doing, and we're working hand-in-hand with the College of Liberal Arts at UNH, is we're saying, well, not only are humanities important right now, but then you can move on to an easy transition to University of New Hampshire, and you can delve into it in a greater way. And so there's an end game with the humanities. I often hear from students say, well, I don't like history that much. It's okay. I mean, I enjoy it, but I can't do anything with it.
I've heard that, too. What are you going to do with that philosophy degree or that history degree? Some of the smartest reporters in this newsroom have degrees in philosophy and history. Go ahead.
Well, I spend a lot of time, much of my time, doing that very answering that question. And I'll say to them, look, a good liberal arts background can take you in a lot of directions. The biggest employer in the country is the United States government. The biggest employer in the state is the state government, and they hire people in all kinds of fields. And so a good liberal arts background, whether it's history or philosophy or whatever, can lead you into a lot of different directions.
Savannah, what do you hear from fellow students? This is a push-pull that I have with the teenagers in my own house, not just my own kids, but their friends. And I hear time and time again from them what Stu says, well, I really enjoy history or I really enjoy English, but what am I going to do with that? I should study computer science. And frankly, that's the message that they're getting from adults. So I just wonder what you hear.
For my own personal experience, I was like, oh, I'm going to go into, like, psychology. And they really don't recommend that anymore.
Who's they?
Like, when I was in high school, a lot of, like, my counselors were like, well, what are you going to do? And I was like, isn't that what you're here for? But so it was more of, like, I mean, a lot of people feel that way, I feel like, too, that they don't know what they necessarily are going to do with their degree. And from my own personal experience, you either know or you don't. And so I wish I really don't have an answer to that.
But you have also received a similar message. What are you going to do with a degree in psychology?
Exactly. I feel like they just expect you to know or to go further with it. But if you don't necessarily want to, you just get your bachelor's in psychology. They don't really set you up the way you would like them to. And I wish I knew what I was supposed to do with a psychology degree, but I don't.
Well, understanding how people think mm-hmm. and what motivates them, that sounds like a recipe for success in any field. Go ahead, Chancellor Cattell, and then I want to hit some of these emails.
Linking this back to the Andrew Mellon grant is, I think Mellon Foundation has recognized that they shouldn't shy away from recognizing the business case, the employment case for the humanities, the value of the humanities in employment. And to make sure that young people are aware of that linkage, that relevance, because instead of promoting sort of the higher ends and more the elitism around the humanities, to promote that it does have some practical elements. So you take a psychology degree and you think about the behavioral health issues, the community issues that are there, and the great need for people in the behavioral health profession who could draw on their psychology degree. And if they get their degree at community colleges with diverse populations, with an understanding of their community, they could serve their communities in behavioral health professions. And there's other areas. I've heard from tech companies that hire programmers that the best programmer is a strong English or somebody who majored in Spanish or a foreign language who also has coding. Because if you think about to understand English and put together good prose or to write poetry, you know, that's a little bit like coding. That's putting together thoughts, putting together pieces in an interesting, creative way to create a new whole. So you have that discipline, and you have the discipline of learning a language, and coding is like a language. And you apply that, and back to what Brian and others said, creativity, problem solving. It's not just about this current code that you're learning, but you're learning in general how to apply logic to create something using different type of languages, using different types of coding.
Brian, real quick, and then I got a couple interesting emails I want to share with you.
I think there are a few things that come together. And one is historically in the humanities, we've not done a real good job of framing its importance. But if you go back decades ago, we could get away with that because the cost of attending higher education was so low that parents could feel comfortable writing a small check and you can spend 2 years or 4 years exploring all these Thoreau and Emerson. If it wasn't exactly pragmatic, that was kind of fine for people because the cost has gone up. And people have more complex lives, and there's more people engaged in higher education from different socioeconomic backgrounds, cost becomes a bigger issue. And so then you start looking at higher education from the mindset of a consumer. What am
more
I getting?
More dollars and cents.
Yeah, what's the output? What am I getting? What's the credential that's going to enable me to get a job? Because if I'm paying in, I need to get something back that's obvious, and it doesn't have to be, you know, so in an intuitive place. And so I think one of the things that we're doing in the humanities that, you know, Chancellor Cattell just made the case on was how we're framing its importance, that it's pragmatic. The fact that, you know, I'm thinking about this TED talk of why electricians need Shakespeare is because we need to frame it. We need to let people know how important it is. It is of critical importance.
Here's an email from Brian who says, I have a degree in fire science. Savannah, you talked earlier about a lot of your classmates were working towards those degrees. Brian says, it has served me well. It set me on a course to more higher learning, including transferring my credits into Keene State College's industrial safety program. The, quote, unnecessary classes I have taken have done nothing but enrich my life. Regardless of the course of study, a well-rounded education is a huge benefit in life. Brian says, had I not taken them, I may never have known that I enjoy classic literature, photography, art, meditation, and discussing views outside my own. It was not supposed to be easy. The challenge offers the chance to better ourselves. Brian, really interesting to get your feedback on that conversation that we had. Jerry in Laconia says, as I near retirement, I think about my education and career. Jerry says, I feel strongly that I would have been as successful and perhaps more successful if I had earned a 2-year degree in business as opposed to my 4-year degree I earned at UNH. Jerry says, as it turned out, my career in technology support was possible because I self-taught and because of my experiences. No doubt I benefited from my UNH education, but I would have liked to have gotten that 2-year degree and then reevaluated my education goals. Jerry, thank you for the email. Let's take a call, and this is Lisa in Nashua. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello?
Hi, Lisa. You're on the air. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that one of the benefits of community college, too, can be for students who are not very, like first-generation students at college, and then students that maybe transfer from other countries, because a 4-year college may be, like, difficult to navigate, and community colleges really make it easy to apply and kind of understand how to navigate the system. So I have I'm a first-generation college student, and I have a master's degree now, but I don't think it would have been possible without starting at community college for me, because it was so overwhelming to think of, like, the whole education, like, university career.
Wow. Lisa, it's really good to hear from you. Savannah, this sounds like what you said earlier. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think, like I said at the beginning, LRCC was a great gateway to everything that I've been introduced to. I was on, like, the presidential search committee for my own college, so I had a say in that. I'm on the Student Senate. I was on the RA committee. I participated in a whole bunch of different extracurriculars. And for the first generation, so my sister was the first generation out of our family, and she also attended LRCC. And she got her accounting. I think it was her degree, but I'm continuing to go further. So I get that whole feeling like you have to go into a university and not feeling ready for it, especially for those first-generation people.
Well, and Brian, Lisa called from Nashua. You're in Manchester, both very diverse cities, and I wonder what you're seeing in terms of people coming to New Hampshire from other countries and getting their educational feet wet, so to speak, at Manchester Community College.
It's incredible. I think, you know, I'm biased because I'm at Manchester Community College, but I think in some ways we have to be the most diverse community college in New England. Manchester is a refugee city. It's a gateway city. We have lots of immigrants coming through the city. So we have students in a single classroom. You can have a student that is from another country. You can have a student that's from rural areas. We have students that grow up on farms, and they come for our HVAC program. It's the only one really in New England, so they're coming here for that. Then you have students from classic suburb-type situation. We have all kinds of different languages, so ages. I mean, it's all across the board. So it's an incredible milieu, and so just organically – people are making those connections that are with other people that are different from them. And that's where a lot of learning takes place, is from each other.
That's the helpful part. So I know community colleges are trying to do a lot of online education. Does that get diminished, Brian, when students are taking more courses online and not engaging in those very different populations?
I think years ago that was true. And when online courses first came out, it was almost like they were correspondence courses.
I see.
As time has gone on and technology has evolved, it's really taken off in a much different way. And I changed my perspective on this when I taught an online course, because I had some really some views on online classes that, you know, it just seemed like it was less than. And then when I taught an online course, I was blown away at the connections people make. It's really incredible. And there's also this video and people are interacting with each other on a tremendous level. And so it's a great opportunity. And, you know, I was meeting with faculty recently, and we're looking at, as 5G comes along, this is going to get even better.
All right. Well, that's a subject for another show that I'm really interested in, online education. I'll leave that aside for now. I'd like to talk to Monica in Penacook, who's calling in. Hi, Monica. You're on the air. Go ahead. Monica, good morning. Are you there? Okay. Let's take an email. Here's Liz in Holderness, who says, what factors account for the lower cost of tuition at community colleges in New Hampshire compared with public four-year colleges and universities in the state? Chancellor Gutell, I think that one's for you. It's a good question, Liz. Thank you.
Well, you know, there's a variety of factors. First of all, it's our focus on the affordability. The state over time has been coming forward with increased funding to support that affordability objective. Recognize that a lot of our programs are just focused on our students' needs and the priorities within our communities. Our physical plants, our research facilities, are very limited. We really, focus specifically on the student needs. So if you visit our campuses, they're very accommodating of students, but they're very different than if you visit a four-year university, either at a public level or at a private institutional level. And then we do have industry partnerships. So some of the programs that we've talked about here, we get equipment from industry that is donated. From industry.
So you don't have
and
to buy
then
it yourself.
We're committed to keeping our tuition, working with the legislature to keep in our tuition at such that if a student is eligible for a full-time Pell Grant, the federal grant award, which is about $6,300 now, then they could use that Pell Grant award. Will pay the full cost of a year of community college tuition. So that price point for tuition is really important. So a student that meets that criteria could not have to pay out of pocket for community college education.
Stu Wallace, you got this conversation going, talking about the role of humanities and how important they are at the community college level. What's the one thing you want listeners to walk away with today?
I'd like them to understand that the community colleges represent a huge array of opportunities. If you look, say, at our capstone project or exhibition today at NHTI, there are 60 different examples of different programs in nursing, programs in engineering, programs in education, programs even in communication and English. There's an array of interesting things out there. And this is a wonderful place to jump in, to sample what's out there. Every student is different. Every student has different needs. Every one of our colleges is different in what they offer. You have an infinite array of opportunities. Take advantage of it.
Well, and I'm still waiting for that TED Talk from you, Brian. So this has been great. Thank you all so much. I really appreciate you coming in. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.